Welcome to the Pinoy Church Podcast. We're glad that you're interested in connecting through this teaching time. If you'd like to connect further, feel free to reach out to us through our website, pinoychurch.org. For now, enjoy this teaching from Pinoy Church, where our mission is to lead people into a growing relationship with Jesus Christ.
We are talking about enemies of the heart, and this is our final week of that. Next week, we'll go into our Advent celebration and continue the Advent themes throughout December. But we've talked about guilt, anger, and greed so far as enemies of the heart, and hopefully we can all agree that when we let those things into our heart, when we give them a place to make a home in our heart, that it really it has a lot of negative baggage, not just for us, but for the people around us too. Today, we're wrapping things up with jealousy. Jealousy, again, is something that we're talking about not because I think that there's any one person or in general our congregation has a big problem with jealousy or anger or greed or anything like that. The honest truth is that we all can probably pick one of those things that we struggle with, or maybe we struggle with all of them to a certain degree. It's been interesting to have folks come up to me and tell me who they are in the sermon. I'm person A or B or C, whatever, like depending on the week we're talking about, or telling me where they've struggled, or even telling me where they used to struggle and where they feel like they have gained some ground. And I want to say, great job. Because I feel like you've taken to heart the thing that I asked of you. When we hear a sermon, the easiest thing to do is think in our head, oh, I really hope so-and-so's listening, right? Or we think to ourselves, I wish that my mother or my brother or my sister or my coworker or my friend or my spouse was here to hear this week, right? We name the person in our head and we think, man, I hope they're listening right now. And what I asked you to do was do something that's a little bit harder than that. Look in the mirror. And I feel like you guys have been doing that, hence some of the stories that I've been told. It takes a lot of courage to look in a mirror. And that's the honest truth. I want to open with a passage here this morning from James chapter 1. It says this, "Do not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves. Do what it says. Anyone who listens to the word but does not do what it says is like a man who looks at his face in a mirror and after looking at himself goes away and immediately forgets what he looks like. But the man who looks intently into the perfect law that gives freedom and continues to do this, not forgetting what he has heard but doing it, he will be blessed in what he does." Paul tells us in some of his writings that we're given the law to help point out where we've fallen short in following it. In his writings, he says, Christ is given to us to reconcile us to God in grace and mercy. So again, well done for looking in the mirror. Well done for looking into the law to see where are the places that we need to make a change. Where are we measuring short right now? But also good job and opening your arms to the grace and mercy that is offered you. Church is not a place, should not be a place. It is an abusive place if all we're doing is smacking people and telling them, you're doing this wrong, you're doing this wrong, you're doing this wrong. Church also needs to be a place where we have our arms open to the grace and mercy of Jesus and the reconciliation he provides between us and the Father. If we have one without the other, we're missing the point, okay? So well done on that. Today, we're jumping into jealousy. And we're gonna do the same three things I've been saying the whole time. One, we're gonna define what jealousy is, so we're all on the same page. Number two, we're gonna talk about how to confront jealousy. If you're a person who struggles with jealousy, how do you confront that in your life? And then the third thing we're gonna talk about is the power of something that is the opposite of jealousy. And today, that thing is celebration, all right? If we said in the beginning that guilt says, I owe you, anger said, you owe me, greed said, I owe me, then jealousy is saying, God owes me. And on the outset, you might disagree. So give me some time to work my words here a little bit and convince you that this is actually a problem between you and God. And we'll see if you feel convinced by that. Cain was jealous of Abel. Esau was jealous of Jacob. Joseph's brothers were jealous of his relationship with their dad. Woody was jealous of Buzz Lightyear. Jealousy has plagued us since the beginning, all the way to modern times and into infinity and beyond. Now, I need a couple of folks to help me out with an example. I need four people to come up here to the front. Doesn't matter, any four will do. You don't have to come too far, I'll come toward you. And you're gonna pick a straw. Well, actually, it's a toothpick. All right, any four. All right, Bob, bring it on. Pick one, and stand off to the side here. Awesome. All right, one more. All right, everybody pick the toothpick. Who got the short straw?
Probably me.
Yep. Okay, perfect. Now listen, how does Bob know he got the short straw? How? He had to compare it to the other ones, right? All right, that's our first lesson today. Okay, you guys can sit down.
I'm jealous, I didn't get a short straw.
Perfect. Thank you for your help. Bob only knows he got the short toothpick, and he's right, he did, by comparing it to the other toothpicks. There's only a little bit broken off that toothpick. We often live this life feeling like somehow we're the victim, that somehow we got the short straw, and the way that we figure it out is by looking all around us at everybody else's straws and deciding if ours is short or not. Comparison is one of the first ways that jealousy finds a foothold in your life. When we think of jealousy, what we think about is the things that others have that we lack. So it could be looks, could be skills, could be opportunities, it could be health, it could be height, right? Could be inheritance, could be finances, you name it. We look around to see what others have that we do not. And our hearts get a bit twisted when we start doing the comparison thing. Slowly a problem will grow between me and the person who has what I do not. So Bob starts to look around and sees Randy and sees Barry, you came up, right? Barry's toothpick. And he starts to be frustrated and a bit jealous of their toothpicks, right? The problem seems to be between Bob and the others because Bob sees that they have things that he doesn't. God blessed them and skipped me. That's sort of what we think. You know, Bob would say, it's not really my fault. I just picked a toothpick out of Nick's hand. It has nothing to do with me. Nick gave me the short straw. And I sort of did, right? There was a short straw in my hand. I didn't make Bob pick that one. He picked that one. Why did God bless my neighbor with a new car? I could use a new car. One with less dents and shinier paint, a few less miles. I mean, I don't really have a problem that my neighbor has a new car. I don't want his car, but I wouldn't mind having a new car. Why did God skip me when he was handing out the new cars? Or how about this? Why is my sister able to wear a size 3? Why can't I wear a size 3? We basically have the same genes, we eat the same stuff. I don't really have a problem that she's skinnier than me. Where was God when he was giving out the skinny jeans? You see what I did there? It's called a double entendre. Skinny jeans and, you know, jeans. Yeah, all right. We think these sort of thoughts, right? We look at others around us. We think these thoughts. They run through our heads. We don't like that they're there. We don't want them to there. We try not to think those thoughts. But then the person with the skinny jeans and the shiny car gets a promotion at work. Or they get an inheritance from a long-lost relative. And we begin to think, you know, if I had what they have, if I had all that they have, then my life would be happier and healthier and richer. If you believe in a God, that's the basis this morning. Not saying if you're the closest to God, I'm not saying you've had a relationship for a really long time with God, I'm simply saying if you believe in a God, then your jealousy problem isn't with your neighbor or your sister or your brother-in-law. It's a problem with your creator. Because your creator owes you the skinny jeans and the non-receding hairline at 50 and a good job and a new car and a healthy family and a beautiful spouse and whatever else. Most of the time, we register jealousy as a problem that I have with another person, specifically the one that I'm jealous of. But in reality, it is a problem with God because God had control of the short straw that I drew. And see, this is where jealousy is a little different than everything else we've talked about. Jealousy is a problem with God, but it's a problem that rears its ugly head against our neighbor. Now, here's the irony. Your star athlete brother can't make you a better athlete. Your brother-in-law with the flowing locks of hair at 50 can't make your bald head grow more hair. Your sister who fits into jeans smaller than you can't make you fit into those jeans. And your neighbor who got the promotion can't suddenly make your job pay you more. This is a really important thing for us to come to realize this morning. The only thing that the haves can do to make the have-nots feel better is to suffer a setback. Now, this is a test of your heart. If you can put yourself in this situation and you can go, oh yeah, I can think of a time when I smiled to myself because of the setback that they faced, that's a time I was jealous. Let me give you an example. A few months back, my brother-in-law told me a story about Jeff Bezos. Anybody know who that is? Yeah, he's like the guy that owns, he's like a mega billionaire or something. He owns Amazon. Jeff Bezos was having a mega yacht built. And yes, that's what it's called, a mega yacht. It's something that's it costs a little over $500 million to build. It's a big boat. And he had it being built in a Dutch town called Rotterdam. And in the port where it's being built, there's only one way out to sea, and there's a bridge. And it's a historic bridge, it's important to the town. I don't know the whole reason why, it has to do with World War II, but regardless of that, very important bridge. And what the yacht designer and Jeff Bezos thought was that when the time comes and the yacht is built, they could spend a bunch of money, kind of throw it at the town council and say, we need a variance to take the bridge down, get the yacht out, put the bridge back. They assumed that that wouldn't be a problem. Until the day came that the yacht was finished and they went to go get their variance and the town council said no. And you know, I found that out, that they were gonna have to dismantle part of Jeff's yacht instead of the bridge. I smiled to myself. I thought, so money can't fix everything. All right, so the light just shone real big right on my heart. They get what they deserve. What did they deserve? What did they do to me? Why do I feel smug? The only thing that the haves can do to make a have-not feel better is suffer a setback of some kind. You ever feel smug? You ever feel smug when the person who was a size three now can't fit into a size three? You ever feel smug when your neighbor's new car gets driven to Kmart or Walmart and somebody dings the door? You ever feel smug when your brother with the flowing locks of hair gets a really bad haircut? No? Yeah, me either. See, look, it's not really about the person you're jealous of. That's the honest truth. Jealousy and that twinge of smugness that you feel when somebody loses something, we may hate that, and we may think it's about our neighbor, but it's not really about our neighbor, it's about our hearts. That light that shines on our heart when we feel that smugness, when we smile to ourselves because we hear about the setback that somebody else faced, well, that's jealousy. And I'll be honest, if we can agree this morning that the most basic Christian command of us is to love one another, when I am feeling smug, and I am feeling jealous, it is very difficult for me to love another person. Now you might think I'm off still, saying that this is about you and God, and it's not about the person, But, well, instead of saying but, here's why a lot of people struggle with this. Because most people think, I would say to God, God, you don't owe me anything. God, I owe you everything. God, you've done so much for me. We'll say that in church. We'll say that as we sing certain musical songs. But the reality is, when we sit down in our real life, outside of this building, outside of this meeting place, outside of our worship time, we start feeling jealous of the people who have things that we do not have. Or get the credit that we don't have. Maybe it's not a thing. Maybe it's not money. Maybe it's credit. Maybe it's esteem. Bottom line is this. If God had taken care of you the way he has taken care of other people, if God had blessed you the way he blesses other people, then you'd be in much better shape relationally, professionally, financially. It comes down to the God owing you. Now, I'll give you a really real story. Not a funny one about Jeff Bezos. You guys know that I had two daughters who passed away, Sage and Micah. And you know that when we had Sage and Micah, I was on pastoral staff at another church. I was a youth pastor at the time. I had, before that, worked at a summer camp. I had given so much of my time, my energy, my education to ministry. When that call came from that other church to go there, I went there. My wife was involved in everything that we did. We didn't have a whole lot of time for a lot of things, and we didn't have a lot of money for a lot of things. Everything we did was really about ministry. We mentored kids. We did programs. We created new programs. We hopped into existing programs. We did everything we could to build the youth group at this place so that to care for these kids. When we saw that there was a problem with losing young adults as they graduated high school, with some other friends, we started a young adult group that grew. It met in multiple locations, but that took up more time and more energy and more ministry. And when we go back and we think about what our schedule was like then, you know, Sunday there were two services. On Monday night was youth group. On Tuesday was youth leadership team. Oh, Sunday night was also our young adult group. Wednesday was youth group again. Thursday was probably worship team practice, which my wife was sometimes involved in. I'm not allowed to go near a worship team, all right? Friday or Saturday might have been an event or a retreat or something like that with a youth group. I mean, our time was just so focused on the church. And I don't say that in a way of bragging. I'm saying that to confess to you that when our daughters were born and when our daughters had the health problems that they had, I threw my hands up and said, I don't understand, God. We have given you everything. Everything. How can you do this to us? We've devoted all of our time and all of our energy. Most of everything we have. Our home is always open. How can you do, God, you owe me a healthy family. And while maybe I never said that out loud to anybody, it sure felt that way. God, I've given you everything. How can you take this from me? At the most basic level, it was a God, you owe me. When I look around at other people who have children and sometimes watch how they treat or mistreat or forget or neglect, and I think, you have no idea how good you have it. You can have kids. How can God not give me that? Maybe that doesn't come across as jealousy. Maybe some of you can relate. I sure felt like God owed me. I felt like I had paid into the system. Now it's time for the system to pay back. And the check bounced. How do you confront jealousy in your life? When that light shines in on your heart, when you realize that you feel like God dropped the ball with you? What do you do with it? I want to look at a passage this morning from James. I read earlier from James, so I want to jump to James chapter 4. Because James asked this really important question. And if you want to follow along, I'm going to spend the rest of the time in James chapter 4. So feel free to open up your Bibles if you want. But I'll also have it on the screen for you. James is the half-brother of Jesus, just to put it in context. He's one of the earliest leaders of the church. And he writes this letter, and he asks the group of people that he writes the letter to, he says, what causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? Now, if I was to sit down with you, and it was just a small group of us, you know, and I said, so what causes fights between you and your friends, or you and your family, or you and your spouse? What causes fights and quarrels within you? You might respond and say something like, well, which fights and quarrels are you talking about? Are you talking about like financial ones? Are you talking about like theological ones? Are you talking about like parenting ones? Like which fights and quarrels are you talking about? The thing is that James doesn't seem to think that that matters. He doesn't make a distinction. He just asks, fights and quarrels, all of them. What causes the fights and quarrels, all of them among you? It seems like James thinks that our fights and disagreements, all of them, can be boiled down to one thing. They come from desires that battle within you. They are the result of an internal struggle that has worked its way to the surface. In his book, Enemies of the Heart, which is the reason that we're doing this series, Andy Stanley says this, and I think it's just so spot on, but it's also hard to hear. The common denominator in all my relational conflicts is me. And the common denominator in all your relational conflicts is you. The common denominator is the thing that stays the same. The common denominator in all of my relational conflicts is me. What I like about that statement and why I share it with you is because you can't change somebody else. You can't make them change. You have no control over somebody else. Certainly not if you are intent on loving them. Maybe you can exert control over somebody, but that would be abusive in some way, shape, or form. If you're intent on loving someone, then you really have no control over them. You can't make them change. You can only control you. So the common denominator in all of your relational conflicts is you. So what's the internal struggle that James is talking about? You want something, but you don't get it. You want something, but you don't get it. You want our way, but we can't have our way. At my house, sometimes we'll have a movie night with the kids. Sometimes after a really long day, we'll have a movie night. And generally what we try to do is we have a movie that we all agree on. But you can imagine getting a 2, a 4-year-old, a 4-year-old, and a 7-year-old to agree on a movie is hard. Yeah? You can imagine that, right? Because somebody always wants a movie that somebody else doesn't want. And there's one kid standing in the way of another kid having what they want. It's pretty simple. Cain presented an offering to God. He wanted God to look favorably upon his offering and bless it. But God looked favorably upon his brother's blessing. And so from Cain's perspective, Abel stood between him and God's blessing. Abel got what he wanted. He couldn't have what he wanted. Abel stood in the way. Sometimes churches can argue about the kind of music they want. You can imagine that, right? No, definitely not. Some people want old music. Some people want new music. One party wants one type of music while the other party wants a different type of music. Both parties seem to be standing in the way of the other party getting what they want. At a previous place I worked, there was a decor committee, and that committee was responsible to renovate a bathroom. Just so happened the bathroom was outside my office, so I got to be privy to many of the conversations. And they had to get new wallpaper and new paint and new partitions and all sorts of stuff. I remember multiple people on the committee thinking that the right way to go was a certain way, but that way didn't agree with the person next to them. And so on the committee, each person stood in the way of the other person getting what they thought was the right way, getting what they wanted. How about this example? Husband wants a new vehicle. A wife wants to save toward a family vacation. Who's right? Is the arguments that follow really about a vehicle or a vacation? The husband wants the wife to agree that, you know, after all these years of driving around a beater car, he deserves a new vehicle. The wife wants the husband to value the family vacation time that she does. Both people want their way. Both people are standing in the way of the other person getting it. What causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? You want something, but you don't get it. You kill and covet, but you can't have what you want. You quarrel and fight. And you might think, Nick, killing? That's a little strong. But Cain killed Abel when Abel stood between him and God's blessing. Esau threatened the life of Jacob. And Jacob thought he was serious enough that he ran away for years and years and years and years and missed his family. Joseph's brothers considered killing him. And luckily, one brother talked him out of it, but they still sold him into slavery. And then they went back and told his father that he was dead. Unfortunately, the honest truth is that when jealousy is the thing, killing isn't too strong a word. Comes down to this. The issue in every quarrel that we have with other people is that we want something and somebody's standing in our way. And when we can own that, it makes a really big difference in how we look at the problem. When everyone involved in the quarrel can own their part of it, the problem often begins to disappear because the truth rises to the surface and the conversation changes. Until I can own my part of the problem, I will blame the other person. Now follow me here, okay? Because this gets a little tricky, but it's really, really important. Until I can own my part of the problem, I will blame the other person. Blame is an admission that you cannot be happy without another person's cooperation. Blame is an admission that you cannot be happy without another person's cooperation. The husband blames the wife that he can't get the new vehicle. Blame admits that he cannot have what he wants without her cooperation. The decor committee members blame each other for not being in agreement about the bathroom decor. Blame admits that they cannot have what they want without the other's cooperation. Church members blame each other for their dissatisfaction with the music style, but blame admits that they cannot have what they want without the other person's cooperation. My children blame each other when dad gets to pick the movie because they can't agree because they need one another's cooperation. Blame admits that if you don't act in a certain way, I can't be satisfied or content. Did you hear that? Blame admits that if you don't act in a certain way, I can't be satisfied or content. This is a big deal. This is a big problem. Not just in the world we live in the culture we live in the families that we have, in the church that we also are a part of. If you can never be happy until you can control the actions and the reactions of the people around you, then there really isn't any hope. You can't change them. You can only change you. You can't control them. You can only control you. What causes you to quarrel and fight? Doesn't it come from the desires that battle deep within you? You want something, but you don't get it. You are trying to squeeze your happiness out of everyone around you, and everyone around you is trying to squeeze their happiness out of you, and the process is suffocating everybody. So what can you do with a desire that can never be fully satisfied? James finishes his passage like this. He says, you don't have what you want because you don't ask God. And when you ask, you don't receive because you ask with wrong motives that you may get what you want and spend it on your pleasure. Now, Let's keep being pretty honest here. Your neighbor with the new car didn't put desires in your heart. Your sister with the jean size didn't put desires in your heart. Your brother-in-law with the great hair didn't put desires in your heart. Your fellow church member with a different taste in music didn't put desires in your heart. My kid, who wants one movie, didn't put desires in another kid's heart. The husband didn't put desire for family vacation and family time in the wife's heart. The wife didn't put desire for a new vehicle in her husband's heart. So why then do we think that our neighbor, our sibling, our friend, our boss, our fellow church member, or whoever it is, can be the one to solve your desire problem? Why not go to the place where the desires come from? And you might say, well, Nick, I did that. Okay, good. So you went to God in prayer. Awesome. Did you go to God in prayer and ask him to change your neighbor's heart? Because that is exactly the wrong motives that James is talking about. Your job isn't to go to prayer and ask them to change the person's heart who you're jealous of. Your job is to go to God and confess that you have a jealousy problem with something that your neighbor has or is that you don't have and you are not. Here's the great thing about God. You don't need to have any caveats with him. You know, if you're sitting in a small group of people and you're trying to be honest and share about your jealousy problems, you might have a caveat. You say things like, you know I shouldn't feel this way, but, or I know that in the grand scheme of things, this is really small, but here's the good news. You don't have to do that with God because God knows you. He made you. He loves you. He forgives you for everything and anything you've ever done. He forgives you for anything and everything that you will do. He knows you, he loves you, he made you. You can just be honest with him. God, I'm pretty frustrated my neighbor has a new car. Do you see what I'm driving? Why can't my wife understand that I should get a new vehicle? I've been driving around this crazy rusty thing for years. I want to watch Buzz Lightyear and my sister wants to watch something else. Like, we can be honest. We don't have to caveat it with God. That's wonderful. And once you can confess to God that you're upset because you're not getting your way, you can dump your desires and your needs and your anxiety on him. You're gonna find that it's much easier and much lighter to deal with the people in your life. Whether they give you recognition, love, or credit that you deserve, or that you desire, you're gonna start finding that when you give that stuff to God, you're not looking for it from those people anymore. Can I be like really, really honest for a second? I don't have good words for this, so I'm gonna use some like words that I wouldn't normally use from the pulpit. There's this book that I read a lot of years ago, and the title is one that I can't say, but essentially the idea is you have only so many craps to give in your life. You can't give about every single thing that's out there. You have to choose what you care about. That's a good way to put it. You have only so many cares that you can give in your whole life. If you choose to make every single thing your care, you are gonna be running around with your head cut off, unhappy forever. You have to care about the stuff that only you can care about. You have to choose to not care about every single thing that's out there. And I know that's hard, and I know that might sound weird coming from this pulpit, from a pastor to a congregation, to say you have to stop caring so much, but I'm not saying you should stop caring about the things that God cares about. If God says take care of the orphan and the widow, care about that. If God says love your neighbor, care about that. If he says love your enemy, care about that. But the thing is that we have incorporated all of these cares into our life that God never put on us. And so instead of caring for the orphan and the widow, instead of loving my neighbor, instead of loving my enemy, I have taken all of my time and all of my energy into caring what so-and-so thinks and what so-and-so drives and how much so-and-so makes. Life is too short for you to care about that kind of stuff. Care about the stuff that God has told you to care about. We have time for that. God made you for that. You feel exhausted? You feel like you're out of energy? You feel like you're at the end of your rope? You feel like you don't know what to do? Maybe, just possibly, it's because you're caring about things that God didn't make you to care about. We have to care less about some things. If we can get that, friends, the time and the energy and the love and the resources that we can pour into the things that we're supposed to care about is going to blow your mind. When you are caring about the things that God has actually placed on us to care about, the blessing that I believe he lays on that, when you're not wasting your time, your energy, your gifting, your resources, all of the things he's given you on this other stuff, I mean, it's going to just blow your mind. It kind of seems like in this passage, though, I do want to say this. It kind of seems like James gives an out to God. He says that when you don't receive, the reason you don't receive is because you ask with wrong motives. So it almost seems like James making a little excuse for God. Like, oh, if you ask for something and you don't get it, it must be because your heart's all messed up. Sometimes love means saying no. I think anybody in here that's a parent gets that. Anybody in here that's a grandparent gets that. Anybody in here that's ever been a youth leader gets that. Anybody in here that's ever actually been a babysitter for somebody else gets that. Anybody in here that's been an older sibling, do you know what I'm saying? You get. Sometimes love means saying no. God loves you too much to say yes to everything you want. Because honestly, if you get everything you want, your life would probably be a wreck. And God loves the people around you too much to say yes to everything you want. There's this country song, it's like, I don't know, 20, 25 years old. And in it, the guy who's singing it talks about thanking God for unanswered prayers. I like songs that tell a story. And he's telling a story, he's like, I ran into my high school girlfriend. And he's recalling all these prayers he prayed that that high school girlfriend would be the one for him. And then in the chorus he sings, but I thank God for unanswered prayers because if I had married that one, I wouldn't have married the one who is my wife, who is the mother to my children, I wouldn't have met her. Sometimes love means saying no. Sometimes when God says no to you, it's because he has a different vision in store for your future than what you have. Sometimes when God says no, it's gonna be really, really hard. But something really beautiful is going to come out of it. Because sometimes love means saying no. But God still wants you to bring it all to him. He doesn't want you to anticipate that he's going to say no to you. So what? God might say no, so I'm not going to tell him? No, bring it to him. Let God decide whether or not he says yes to the desire in your heart. And if you feel a little silly for bringing that desire to him, well, maybe that tells you all you need to know. If he says no to it, well, that gives you an answer. God wants us to depend on him because all good things and perfect things come from him. James says that earlier in his letter to the church. All good and perfect things come from God. He is the God who provides all good and perfect things, not all wished-for things. And that's something that we don't remember in the world that we live in. We wish and we wish and we want, and we think we deserve, but God is not the God of every wish. He is the God of love. He is the God of good and perfect things that will be given to you. It doesn't make sense that when we don't get what we want, that we take it out on the people around us. It makes more sense that we take it to God. And I can promise you this morning that God's shoulders are big enough to take whatever desire that has not been given to you that you want, you can lay it on him. God's shoulders are big enough to hear me cry out, I deserve a healthy family. Where were you, God? Where were you when I was in the NICU? Where were you when I held my daughter? Where were you? And God can say, I was there. I was right with you. I was holding you. I wasn't gone from your life. I wasn't missing from the thing you went through. I was there with you. You could hold her because I was holding you. That's not what I wanted. That's not what I wished for. But in some way, shape, or form, that is what God thought was best for me and for my wife. And I can't explain that. And I will always feel broken about that. And I will always have questions about that. And that is okay because God's shoulders are big enough for that. But I can't blame anybody around me. I can't blame the hospital. I can't blame my wife. I can't blame me. I can't blame anybody. I can put that on God. I can give that to God. And every time that comes up in my life, I can go back and give it to him again. That's what I can do. And that might sound cyclical to you. That might sound like a never-ending thing to you. But guess what? That's faith. That's relationship. You don't always get every answer you want. But what you do get is a God that holds you so you can hold the other. A God who says, I'm with you in this. I'm not leaving you in this. I'm not gone. I'm right here. God is big enough to carry whatever it is that you desire that you do not have. So give it to him and stop laying it on your spouse. Stop laying it on your neighbor. Stop laying it on your coworker. Stop laying it on whoever. Jealousy is also different for this reason. Because if I struggle with anger, I can make a pretty convincing argument why I'm allowed to be angry. If I struggle with greed, I can convince you that I'm just a thrifty, saving person. But jealousy is different because it reshapes how I see the people around me. I think we could agree earlier, we said that loving others is the most basic Christian command, right? When I'm jealous of another person, it's hard to love that person. It is hard to love a person that we're jealous of. It is hard to serve a person who feels like they have what we don't have. It is hard to submit to somebody in brotherly, sisterly, Christian love who feels like they have or they are everything that we want to be. Jealousy twists our picture of our brothers and sister when our brother and sister did nothing except win a race against us that they didn't know they were running. Now here's an important thing that I never thought of. I want to give credit to Andy Stanley here. He says jealousy becomes resentment. Resentment needs justification. If I resent somebody, I need to justify why I resent them. So, I won't be spending my time and energy loving this person. I'll be spending my time and energy justifying why I resent them. I won't be spending my time and energy serving this person. I will be spending my time and energy looking for a justification why I resent the person that I am jealous of. It twists our heart. And now I'm almost done. I'm bringing it down to a close because here's what I want to say. And I don't have a ton to say about it. But I put up here what we've said so far in our series for you. Here's the antidotes, okay? Guilt's antidote was confession. Anger's antidote is forgiveness. Greed's antidote is generosity. Jealousy's antidote is celebration. And that might seem really strange. To guard your heart against jealousy, celebrate others. Celebrate their successes. Celebrate their wins. Celebrate their advancement. Celebrate their giftedness. The very things that would normally cause you frustration because they got them and you didn't, celebrate them for it. When your competitor gets the big sale or your coworker gets the promotion that you thought was yours, celebrate them, congratulate them, shake their hand, take them to lunch. Because while you're busy celebrating them, while you are busy being their biggest fan, it is gonna be really hard for you to find the time to be jealous of them. Celebrate the people who drive you nuts. I know that seems a little backwards, but if you struggle with jealousy, if you've ever had that twinge of jealousy, that smugness of, well, they ran into that problem, celebrate what they're doing. Now, I'm not telling you to be insincere, okay? That's how this could come across, and I'm not telling you that. If your sister doesn't look good in the jeans, then don't tell her. If your brother's haircut doesn't look nice, don't tell him. If your neighbor's car isn't sweet, don't tell them that it is sweet. I'm not telling you to lie to people. But here is the test. If you can walk away with one thing today, let's walk away with this. If the jeans look good, if the hair looks great, if the car is sweet, and you can't bring yourself to say it, you have a problem. You have a problem in your heart. Celebration of others protects you from jealousy. And when you walk up to that person and you shake their hand and you say congratulations, then you are not letting the enemy of the heart control you. You are making room, you're keeping the doors wide open for love, for service, for submission to one another in whatever form that is. That is what God has called you to love one another. And if there be anything in any of us that keeps us from loving another person, be it guilt, be it anger, be it greed, or be it jealousy, friends, we have to eliminate it. Okay? Amen?
Hi, this is Pastor Nick. Thanks for listening. I hope something that you heard today was very helpful. If you want to connect with us further, feel free to check us out on Facebook, Instagram, or our website, KonoiChurch.org. Sure, I'm glad we're in this together.